Well, I've already said that we are kicking off this new year with a series called Worship Matters. That word, worship, we hear that. You hear it mostly on Sunday mornings when we talk a lot about it. But have you ever stopped and wondered what do we really mean when we're talking about worship? Is it what we do? Is it the songs that we sing on Sunday mornings? Is it something that we just do here and there when we feel like it? Or is it something deeper? Is it something that permeates or should permeate every facet of our lives? Well, that's what we're going to look at in this series, because worship does matter. It matters to God, and I hope that it matters to us. And I probably goes without saying that most of us understand that worship goes beyond what we do here on Sunday mornings. It's an important part of it. But it's about how we respond to the greatness of God in our everyday lives. And I think it's a very fitting place to start the new year as a reminder of that. I remember the first time that Steph and I went to Colorado. We went to Estes Park on our honeymoon, and there's a spot somewhere between Greeley and Loveland where the mountains start coming into view. And I still remember, I mean, I'm from Illinois. I've been to the Smokies before then, and those are mountains, but man, when you're approaching the Rockies, and it's even more impressive if you come in via Denver that way, I just remember it was breathtaking. I'd never seen anything like that in my life. And I just, part of me wanted to stop and just take it all in from there, but I was still, but the rest of me was like, no, I've got to get there. I've got to see these mountains. That experience is a little bit of a taste of what worship is. I wasn't worshiping the mountains. I was thanking God for that experience, but that's just a little bit of a taste. Worship is our response to a revelation of something, or in our case, as Christians, of someone so amazing that we can't help but be moved to respond. And with this being Epiphany Sunday, which is the day that we remember and celebrate the Magi making their way to Jesus, we're going to look at that very familiar story from Matthew 2. We often call them the wise men, or if you remember me and Matt and Pastor Dennis years ago, the three wise guys. In fact, somebody was just, I might have been Lorelei, somebody was just talking about that all not that long ago. And tradition holds that there were three. We don't know how many there were exactly, but these men took an extraordinary journey to worship a newborn king. And their story really teaches us a few things about our own journey of worship. And I hope that the things that it teaches us will help us. And as we dig into the story, you can keep these questions in the back of your head. What does my journey of worship look like? Have you ever thought of worship as a journey? What does it look like? Am I seeking Jesus daily? Am I bowing my heart before him? Am I offering him the best of who I am? And so we're going to read the story from Matthew chapter 2. We're just going to read the first part of it, verses 1 through 12. But Matthew has this to say. Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea during the reign of King Herod. About that time, some wise men from eastern lands arrived in Jerusalem asking, "Where is the newborn king of the Jews? We saw his star as it rose, and we have come to worship him." King Herod was deeply disturbed when he heard this, as was everyone in Jerusalem. He called a meeting of the leading priests and teachers of the religious law and asked, "Where's the Messiah supposed to be born?" "In Bethlehem in Judea," they said, "for this is what the prophet wrote. And you, O Bethlehem in the land of Judah, are not the least among the ruling cities of Judah. For a ruler will come from you who will be the shepherd for my people Israel." Then Herod called for a private meeting with the wise men, and he learned from them the time when the star first appeared. Then he told them, "Go to Bethlehem and search carefully for the child. And when you find him, come back and tell me so that I can go worship him too." After this interview, the wise men went on their way, and the star they had seen in the east guided them to Bethlehem. It went ahead of them and stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were filled with joy. They entered the house and saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and worshiped him. Then they opened their treasure chests and gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. When it was time to leave, they returned to their own country by another route, for God had warned them in a dream not to return to Herod. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. Well, the story of the Magi really begins, it actually begins before what I'm about to tell you, it begins way back in the book of Isaiah. But the story of the Magi here in Matthew begins really with their words in verse 2 as they kind of introduce themselves and say what they've come for. They say, we have come to worship this newborn king of the Jews. We saw his star, and so we've been following it. Now, that verse is packed with significance because it points to this extraordinary moment when God chose to reveal himself to these men, Gentiles, and not just Gentiles, Gentiles from an eastern land, from a far-off place. And he chose to reveal himself through a star. Now, that revelation, that appearance of the star was not accidental. It wasn't random. It was intentional and purposeful. And it was not something that these wise men, these magi, dreamed of themselves, which tells us that true worship is not something that we manufacture or we come up with ourselves. And this is really the first important lesson that we learn from this journey of the Magi is that worship begins with a revelation. Worship begins with a revelation. This star that the Magi followed, it might have been an ordinary star, but it was no ordinary star. It was a divine signal that was pointing to the birth of the Messiah. And it's interesting to me that God chose to speak and reveal himself to these Magi in a language that they would understand. They were astronomers. They were scientists. They studied the heavens, which is how they came across this star. God met them where they were, and their knowledge of the stars led them to Jesus, which tells us something very important about God's character. Is that he desires to reveal himself to all people. God is not stingy with revealing himself. Paul talks about all of these things, these things that can be known about God are plainly visible in what we see around us. And God desires to reveal himself even on a deeper level to all people, regardless of their background or circumstances. Again, think about these Magi. They were outsiders. They were Gentiles. They were strangers to the things of God. They were not. This king that they're coming to look for is not even theirs. He's the king of the Jews. And yet God reaches out to them. Very similar to him reaching out to the shepherds. Very unlikely group of people to be the first ones to come worship Jesus. It shows us that God is not selective or distant in his love. His desires for all people to come to know him. And I said the story of the Magi starts back in Isaiah 60 because there is a prophecy in Isaiah 60 that says, all nations will come to your light, mighty kings will come to see your radiance. The journey of the Magi really is the fulfillment of that prophecy right down to their gold and frankincense. Because if you read that chapter, there's a specific reference to those two things. These Magi represent the nations being drawn to the light of Christ, which tells us that the revelation of Christ, Christmas, is for everybody. Christ didn't just come for a select few. He came to reveal himself to everyone. It's an open invitation to experience the love and grace and mercy and truth of God. But what's interesting is that the Magi didn't just see the star and then get on with their lives and think, oh, well, that's interesting. I've never seen something like that happen. That star looks interesting, which is what scientists might do. But these guys were drawn into it. They responded. They left their homes. They left their comfort zones. They left their families to embark on this journey to find this king. They didn't know all of the details. In fact, that's the first thing that come, the first thing that's out of their mouths is kind of a question. Where is this king of the Jews that we've come, that we've, God has, we've been revealed to us in the stars? They're still putting everything together. They don't have a complete roadmap, but they have enough revelation to take the first right step, which again is where worship begins. It begins with a revelation, specifically a revelation of who Christ is. It's never initiated by us. But for that revelation to truly become worship, it requires something else. Revelation requires a response. God reveals himself graciously, and we respond. So think about your own life. How have you seen God reveal himself to you? Have you seen God reveal himself to you? I'm going to be willing to bet if you haven't seen it, it's because you missed it. That's not a shot at you. I'm just encouraging you. Keep looking. I'm going to get ahead of myself if I go there. It requires a response. Maybe God revealed himself through his word. Maybe it was a moment of prayer. Maybe it was like me driving into the mountains, this majestic experience that you don't have any other explanation for other than there's a divine being behind it. Whatever the case, the question is, how did you or how are you responding to that revelation? I think it's worth noting in this story, because there's a few different groups of people that are mentioned here, that not everybody responds in the same way. Some didn't respond at all. The chief priests and the teachers of the law who Herod goes to ask, they don't inquire anymore about why Herod is asking about this. Why, do you know something we don't know? They didn't follow the star. They didn't dig into this anymore. They didn't make the journey to Bethlehem. Herod, who heard the same news as the Magi, which threw him into a tizzy along with everybody else in Jerusalem, apparently, he responded. But I think a gentle way to describe his response is paranoid hostility. Not really worship. It's possible to miss God's revelation. And it's possible to miss it on multiple levels. We can either just miss it by our indifference, as we kind of see happen in with the chief priests and the teachers of the law. We can respond to it with hostility or with thinking that it's a threat. And so I can't respond to this in this way. It's going to mess with my plans. But it's possible to fail to recognize when God is revealing himself, inviting us to draw near to him. He reveals himself to us, but we have to have eyes to see and hearts willing to respond to what he reveals. So my encouragement to you is don't miss the star in your life, whatever form that might take. The Magi teach us another essential truth, that worship continues as we seek. Again, the Magi, they respond, but they don't wait for the king to reveal himself to them, to come to them. They set off on a journey to find him. They were given the revelation, and they responded by seeking the meaning and the source of the revelation, which shows us that worship is not a passive experience, not something that we just take, that we sit back and take in. Although I've been in worship services where it feels like that's what I want to do. I just want to take it all in. Worship is an active thing that we participate in. It's a deliberate choice to pursue Jesus in response to what he's revealed to us. And as the Magi finally get to the home where Jesus is, it's interesting that they don't respond in, well, this is, it, you know, they don't have this laundry list of things. We need to make sure we followed all the signs correctly. Is this the child that we were looking for? You know, all of you. No. Their first response is they walk in, they see the child with his mother Mary, and they do what? They bow down and worship. They don't seem to, it was enough that they found what they knew they found what they were looking for. And it's interesting that Matthew points out that they didn't just bow down, but he adds that little detail that they worship. The Greek word that's used there to describe that is, it comes from the word proskuneo, which if you, prostrating, if you've heard that word, we talk about that. That's where our English word kind of comes from. And that word, like many Greek words, has multiple layers of meaning. Literally, it means the act of physically bowing down, of putting yourself in a physical posture of bowing. But it also has a figurative meaning or a more subjective meaning. And when it's used in the New Testament, it typically carries both senses. And it is almost always, I think it is always reserved for the act of bowing before God, or in this case, in bowing before Christ. It points to a heart attitude of reverence and worship toward God. For the Magi, it wasn't just that I'm sure they bowed to kings and showed respect for other people in authority, but Matthew tells us that this act of bowing went beyond just the physical posture. There was a posture of their heart where they bowed their lives before Jesus. It was an acknowledgement of his divine authority and a physical demonstration of the posture of their hearts, which tells us that the posture of our hearts is central to what it means to worship. And you need to remember, these were men who were probably wealthy. Back in their own country, they probably had some status. They were probably used to people, if they didn't bow to them, they would at least defer respect to them. But here they are in the presence of Jesus. And tradition holds that Jesus is probably at least a couple years old by this time. So he's still, I don't know if you've ever snotty-nosed two-year-old kid. My first inclination is not to bow down and worship that child. But they knew that there was something about this boy that called for their allegiance and their worship. I don't know if you've ever pondered or thought about the power of posture in worship. Raising your hands, bowing your head, kneeling. Now, of course, we can do all of those things and not be postured in our heart. But when our heart is in a certain place, when our heart is bowed before God and we add that just physical posture, it seems like it adds something to. We just want God to know, I'm showing you with my body what I have in my heart. It's an outward expression of the inner attitudes of the heart. And while God doesn't demand any specific physical posture, we should have hearts that are bowed before him, hearts that recognize his greatness and our dependence on him. And while we may not physically bow the way the Magi did, the posture of our hearts is all that much more important. To bow our hearts means to fully surrender to God's will, to acknowledge his authority over every area of our lives. It's about setting aside our pride, our desire for control, and maybe even some of the distractions, to focus entirely on him, which is a kind of surrender that does not come easy. We're used to being in control, or at least thinking that we're in control. I mean, it's why we multitask, right? So we can be in control of as many things at once as we possibly can. We're constantly on the go. We're constantly trying to add more, but worship calls us to it calls us to stop, to pause, to let go, and to fix our eyes on Jesus. And whether we bow physically or raise our hands or whatever in worship, bowing our hearts in worship, it might mean surrendering a whole area of our lives to Jesus, our careers, our relationships, or even our fears into his hands. Again, consider this contrast between the Magi and King Herod. Herod was consumed. You know, Herod was probably one of the single most paranoid kings in the history of mankind. He killed his own family members. When Jesus came on the scene, he was a threat as an infant, which is why he wanted to wipe out all of the boys. He wanted to get rid of this threat. And so that's Herod's response. It's fueled by pride and insecurity. The Magi, on the other hand, they humbled themselves in Jesus' presence in worship, which shows us that pride resists worship. Humility opens the door to it. I should say pride resists giving worship. I don't think pride has any problem with receiving worship. True worship requires us to let go of our ego, to let go of our self-sufficiency, and to lay aside our agendas. And the posture of the Magi's hearts is seen not just in the fact that they bowed down, but you can see it in the gifts that they bring to Jesus, this gold, frankincense, and myrrh. I heard a story quite a while ago about these kids that were in a nativity play at church, and it came time for the wise men to bring their gifts, and the first one goes, "I bring you gold," and the second one goes, "I bring you myrrh," and the third one goes, "Frank sent this." I love that story, and I promise to tell it every time I preach on the story of the Magi. Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Those were not random gifts. Obviously, we've already mentioned that a couple of them were specifically mentioned in the prophecy of Isaiah, but they all had they represented significant things. Gold, a gift fit for a king. It symbolizes Jesus' royalty, and the Magi are showing that they recognize in him that he's a king, that there's something worthy of honor and adoration about him. Frankincense, something that was used in worship often and in offerings to God. And while the Magi might not have fully understood the weight of the gifts that they were giving, they're doing something that might even be on their grasp of understanding. They're showing that in this that there's divinity to Jesus. That he's a king, but he's more than a king. He's God in the flesh. And probably the most significant of them is the gift of myrrh. We encounter myrrh again after Jesus' death. It's the spice that the women were going to take to anoint Jesus' body for burial. And it's probably the most somber of the three gifts because it points to the reason that this child was born in the first place. He came to give his life as a sacrifice. But all of these gifts were of immense value. And it shows us that worship involves bringing something of value to God. For the Magi, it was their treasures, their physical very best. And again, it's them bringing these things. It's not passive. They're actively bringing these things to Jesus. They're giving it out of who they are in response to who Christ is. The way we approach Jesus, what we bring him, reflects our devotion to him. So the question is our posture one of reverence and humility, or are we simply just going through the motions? Are we bringing our very best to him, or just what we have left over, which, I'll be very honest, sometimes that's all we've got. But I pray that us just bringing what we have left over is the exception, that we want to bring him the very best of who we are. Worship it's not about singing the loudest. It's not about being the most flashy on the platform or looking the most spiritual. It's about the posture and attitude of our heart. So while we might not have gold, frankincense, and myrrh, we all have something of value to offer. We talked about time, talent, and treasures around Thanksgiving. Maybe it's your time. Maybe it's time spent with him. Maybe it's time spent pouring into the life of someone else. Maybe it's giving of your resources to bless the life of someone else. Or using our talents to glorify God. So what gift can you bring Jesus? Maybe it's an act of generosity or taking the next right step. That's an act of worship. Remember, worship is about giving ourselves, not out of obligation, but out of love and reverence. There's another important thing we can learn from the Magi, and that you think about their journey. This was no small undertaking that they went on. They didn't stumble on this child on a leisurely stroll through the desert. Their journey was intentional, it was demanding, and it was lengthy. They came from the east, from Babylon, which would be near modern-day Baghdad. They traveled west to Bethlehem, which is about 1,000 miles, and not on a jet. It was challenging. But it shows us that worship is not a single event. It's a continual journey. I mean, think about what it had to have taken for the Magi to go on this journey. They left their homeland. They left their comforts. They likely left their families. Yes, they probably had an entourage that they traveled with, but they left all of this to pursue this mysterious revelation of a king that I've already said wasn't even their king. The journey would have been long and arduous. The terrain had to have been treacherous. I'm sure they had bad weather and sandstorms. I mean, we were preparing for possibly having bad weather. I mean, we've driven to church in the snow before. I guarantee none of you have driven to church in a sandstorm. It was not an easy journey. And yet they pressed on. Why? Because they believed the destination was worth it. Jesus was the destination. So how does this relate to our own journey of worship? Well, worship isn't always easy. It requires effort. It requires commitment, perseverance. Sometimes, and this is probably one of the reasons that we tend to reduce the meaning of worship to those moments where we feel like it or when the mood's right. Sometimes we worship in seasons of joy where the path seems very smooth and it's easy to do that. But other times we are in seasons of struggle where the worship seems hard, the journey's long, and the destination just seems like it's so far off we're never going to get there. In both cases, worship calls us to keep going, trusting that meeting Jesus, the destination, is worth the journey. It's easy, if we're not careful, to fall into the mindset that worship is just something we do when we're in a situation like this, for this hour, or even less, the 3 or 4 songs that we sing on Sunday morning. Everything else is part of the church service, but it's not worship. But true worship is so much more. It's not confined to a building. It's not confined to a time slot or even a specific activity. Worship is a daily pursuit of Jesus, a journey that involves our entire lives. And it's a journey that, like the Magi, has to be driven by faith. Magi didn't have all the answers. They just knew that they were headed in the right direction. They saw the star and they believed that it would lead them to a worthy destination. They didn't really know exactly where that star would take them or what they would find when they got there, but they stepped out in faith and they followed. So faith plays a central role in worship because we don't always see, in fact, very seldom do we see the full picture of what God is doing. We may not understand why certain circumstances arise or what God is actually up to in our lives, and yet worship calls us to trust him, even when the path is not all that clear. And faith is the fuel to our worship, because what faith does is it calls us to focus on who God is and not all of the other things going on around us. And it's important that when we talk about faith, that we don't just throw it out there as a spiritual word. Well, you got through this because you have faith. Well, I can have faith that I'm a duck. Yeah, and you'll get that reaction. It's not that I have faith. It's who my faith is in. So when we allow our faith to focus our attention and our allegiance through our worship on Jesus, that's what fuels our journey. Hebrews 11:6 gives us a very important reminder. It says, it is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that God exists and that he rewards those who sincerely seek him. I have to chuckle every time I read that verse because of the middle part about it. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that he exists. Well, that seems like a fairly logical prerequisite. If you want to talk to somebody, and you should probably believe that he's actually there, right? And it sounds silly, but how often do we go through life? Do we really believe that God is there listening to us? We talked about this last week. For all of the talk at Christmas about Jesus, we overlook him an awful lot. It's the same thing in our worship. For as much as we want to talk about God in our worship, what are we really worshiping when we... And so we have to have faith in him that he's actually there listening to us, and that as we seek him, he's going to receive and reward us as we do. The Magi's journey illustrates this beautifully. Their faith in the star's guidance led them to Jesus. And really, it was the faith, that whether they realized it or not, it was the faith in the one who was giving them the message through the star. Our faith in God's promises will lead us to deeper encounters with him. The Magi story reminds us that worship is not a one-time event. It is a journey that unfolds day by day. Just as the Magi had to take, I've used this multiple times. It's also going to be a New Year's resolution, the next right step. Just as they had to take the next right step, one at a time, to reach Jesus, we are called to worship God in those ordinary step-by-step moments that we take in our lives. Worship happens when we choose to honor God in everything that we do, in our decisions, in how we prioritize our time, and by living in a way that reflects his glory. So think of your life as a journey toward Jesus. Every day, you have opportunities to draw close to him. Some days, those opportunities are like just walking on a smooth path. I see opportunities all over the place to draw close to Jesus. It's a smooth, level, easy journey. Other days, it feels like you're climbing a mountain that you're never going to reach the top of. I just hope I find Jesus somewhere along this. But every step matters. And every act of worship brings you closer to the heart of God. Pilgrimages have been a significant part of Christian tradition for centuries. And there's one well-known pilgrimage that's called the Camino de Santiago in Spain, where people will walk hundreds of miles to reach the Cathedral of Santiago. And along the way, the pilgrims face all sorts of physical exhaustions and moments of doubt and unexpected challenges. But they also experience the profound spiritual growth through encounters with other people on the journey as they draw closer to this destination and a deeper connection with God. In a lot of ways, worship mirrors that kind of pilgrimage. It's not always easy, It often requires us to move beyond our comfort zones. Sometimes, often, we need other people on the journey with us. But as we journey toward Jesus, we find ourselves transformed. The destination, his presence, is worth every step. The Magi's journey shows us the importance of staying committed to worship, even when the road is difficult. So what are a few things that we can do to help cultivate our own daily journey of worship in our lives? Well, the first thing that we can do is start each day with worship. It might just be waking up and acknowledging God's presence. It could be through prayer, through reading a scripture. Maybe if you've got the voice, well, it doesn't matter if you have the voice for it. It could be just singing the first worship song that comes into your mind. Or just simply for thanking him for who he is. Second, see worship in the everyday. Again, worship, it's not limited to singing or attending church. Those are obviously big parts of it, but worship happens when you love your neighbor, when you serve someone else, when you choose gratitude over complaining. Anything that you do in your life that seeks to honor God, that is an act of worship. Three, persevere in the hard seasons. This isn't so much a practical thing because I don't really have any advice in the moment to tell you how you're going to get through that hard season. Sometimes you just have to go through the hard season, but persevere. When life feels overwhelming, remember that worship is a declaration of trust in God. We're going to talk about this, I think, maybe next week, of worship as resistance. Worship is an act of resistance against all of these things that would push us away from God. Even in hardship, he is worthy of worship. And fourth, and this is probably the most obvious of them all, keep your eyes on Jesus. That's the goal of worship. The Magi kept their focus on the star that led them to Christ. In the same way, we need to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus as our ultimate destination. So let me encourage you today as we start this new year. Whatever your journey looks like right now, don't give up. Don't give up. That sounds so cliche, doesn't it? Don't give up. Man, there might be somebody here who just needs to hear those three words. Don't give up. Keep your eyes on Jesus. Worship is not about how far you've come or how perfect your steps have been. It's about faithfully, day after day, step after step, faithfully seeking Jesus. Like the Magi, your journey of worship, I know, will lead you to a deeper encounter with the King. And that's really what we all want, isn't it? Would you pray with me?